Stay tuned for The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM, KSLM. Today's show is being brought to you by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance.
Well, good morning and welcome to The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. I am your host, and I'm so glad that you've joined us today. Today's special guest is my buddy, Captain Richard Chesbrough from the Willamette Queen. How are you, sir?
I'm just great. Thank you very much.
You were here a few weeks ago, and we were talking about the fact that you went around the world on this little canoe that you had, and you took your four kids, and it was, what was the name of the boat?
Three kids. The other one was my wife.
Okay.
We can call her a kid, too.
You could call her that. I'm not.
Okay.
What was the name of that boat that you went on?
The Moon Mist.
The Moon Mist.
Yes.
And you decided to, you left California, and you went to Hawaii first, and then
Correct.
From Hawaii you went...
All through the South Pacific.
Okay, you went through the Panama Canal and all that other fun stuff?
Nope, that's the other boat. That's the one we're going to talk about today.
Okay.
The Moon Mist never went through the Panama Canal.
Where did the Moon Mist end up? Where did you end with that
one? In New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Yep.
You didn't bring it back
Still
home?
There.
Is it really?
I sold it there.
Well, what about all your three kids, your wife, and your belongings?
Well, don't you remember that we had that illness at sea?
Right.
And my wife was hospitalized in New Zealand
okay.
for 9 months. And during that time, I was not aware of the fact that the government of New Zealand was not going to charge me for the hospital stay.
Right.
So I figured I was going to be in debt for the rest of my life. And the only big asset I had to sell was the boat. So we ended up selling it in New Zealand. And
jumping on a plane and coming home?
And jumping on a plane. Actually, we jumped on a plane. You know, one of the things that's difficult when you're in a foreign country and all of a sudden you got a bunch of money in their currency
right.
is how to get the money out of the country. So, and they have very strict requirements on that in New Zealand. You're allowed to send out only $10,000 at a time.
Okay.
And so we sent out the majority of it over a period of 4 or 5 weeks, but then the last 10,000, I couldn't get it out of the country, so I had to spend it somehow in New Zealand money. So we bought a $10,000 ticket around the world, flying any direction we wanted to go for the whole family.
Wow.
So we spent another couple, 3 months hop, skipping, and jumping all over Europe and the Far East and Middle East and just had a grand time working our way back to the United States.
Now, how old were you then?
I was in my mid-40s.
Your mid-40s?
Yep.
And your children were?
That was late 70s.
Pre-teens?
They were pre-teens, correct.
Okay.
My oldest son was 12, and then my daughter was 10, and my youngest son was 9.
Okay. So they had a ball.
They just had a fantastic time.
All right. So you get back home here. Let's kind of pick it up from this. You get back home here. How long, where was home for you then?
Actually, I'm trying to think. Let's see. We were in California. I want to say Sausalito at that time.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty area over there. All the houseboats
Beautiful.
Over there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you crossed
the We might have been living in Novato. I think we might have been in Novato first, then. Nope, it was Sausalito first, then Novato.
Yeah, you crossed the Golden Gate Bridge there, and Sausalito is right there on the right-hand
right
side,
the
down
side.
Below there. It's
yep.
a beautiful area there.
Still is.
So you get home, you're in Sausalito for how long before you decide, hey, let's go buy another boat and go out and do this again?
Actually, it was not very long at all. It was
really?
Probably just a matter of a month or two.
Seriously?
And my wife and I said, well, you know, we've got to live someplace. And she said, you know, we've been living on a boat for the last 2.5 years. Well, at least we had. She was living in a hospital for the last
right.
9 months.
Right.
She said, what about we buy a live aboard boat and we just put it right here in the harbor in Sausalito and just live aboard the boat?
Yeah.
So we started looking around. I said, great idea. It was the whole family just totally enjoyed it. And we found this boat for sale down in Southern California in San Pedro. And it was a 102-foot brigantine schooner.
102-foot. Now,
102 foot.
What was the other one that you had?
The other one was 45.
So this is almost double the size.
Oh, double the size. Absolutely.
Wow.
And so obviously double the living room,
yeah.
the living area.
And double the payment, too?
And double. No, actually not.
Yeah.
It was less expensive to buy that boat because that boat was built in 1912.
Yeah.
So it was obviously a much older boat. and all wood, where the other one was fiberglass and much more modern. So we actually paid less for that boat than we did for the Moon Mist.
Okay.
But it came with a whole bunch of teak wood, because when they brought it from Europe, it was in the Baltic Ocean over in the Baltic Sea, I guess,
right,
in Europe. And the people that brought it over with a whole load of teak wood to sell. And they sold all the teak wood and left a whole bunch of it on board to kind of build it into a liveaboard. Never got that part of it done. So when I bought it, it was a work in progress.
Okay.
And so we finished off the whole interior of the boat, and we're kind of living in it and living in a tent at the same time. And we got
down
it all.
Down in San Pedro?
Down in.
Or are you back up in the Bay Area?
In Sausalito.
Okay.
Yep.
So you brought the boat up?
We brought the boat up to work on it in Sausalito. Okay. I'm sorry, I missed that part.
Yeah.
And we just motored it on up the coast. It was the way we got it up there. It the sails and all that hadn't been rigged up yet. So it was quite a project. I mean, we spent 6 months re-rigging the entire boat. We had sails made, and we were intending to go sailing again. And we finished it off in Sausalito, and we were living on the boat. And then we had a major fire on board in the middle of the night. Interesting story.
That can't be good.
It wasn't good, but it turned out fine because it was easily repairable. But we almost all died as a result of the fire. And that's when we found out that there was a ghost on board the Lady Free.
What?
Yes, absolutely. The ghost is what saved all of our lives. The fire was happened in my wife's, you know, those old-fashioned hair dryers that they put over your head
and yeah, I
to
still
dry
have
your
one.
Hair. You still have
yeah.
one? Okay.
Yeah.
For all your hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
Both of them. Hmm.
Well, she had it in a cupboard in the main living room area, and it evidently it was up against that electrical circuit, and something shorted it, and the thing started to burn. But it was a plastic burn, and the smoke that was coming out was extremely toxic because of the plastic. And the only reason we found out, let me tell you what happened. So all of a sudden, I'm shaken awake. I mean, somebody has physically shaken my body in my bunk, waking me up. And as soon as I opened my eyes, I realized the whole boat was full of smoke.
Oh, boy.
So I got down on my hands and knees, crawled up and opened up the hatches to let the smoke out. Didn't see any fire at all yet. And so I opened up the hatches. Then immediately I started going to looking for the rest of the family. And all of them were out like a light except my youngest son. And so I couldn't find him. He wasn't in his bunk. He was nowhere to be found. So I got the other two kids up, and then finally I got my wife out, and we had to literally carry her out. She was totally unconscious at that point. And we got up on the deck, the firemen were already coming, and my youngest son was with them. He had he's the one that got the firemen going. So it was all happening so fast. I mean, this is like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And so the firemen come on, and they get the fire doused. It was limited to that one cabinet area, so it wasn't that bad, except all the water damage that they did with all the hoses was
right,
incredible.
Right.
So anyways, we're sitting down with the guy, and he's filling out his paperwork, and he said, okay, he says, let's relive this. He says, all right, who saw the fire first? And I said, well, I guess I did. I says, I was the one that crawled up and saw that it was full of smoke and opened it up. Mark said, no, Dad, he says, you woke me up, and I was the first one out because I went through the hatch and went and got the fire department. And I said, Mark, I never woke you up. Well, somebody woke me up. And I said, well, maybe you woke me up. And he said, no. I. Well, that's when we realized we had a ghost on board.
And the ghost woke you up.
Because this boat had been sunk in the Second World War by the Germans in the Baltic Sea.
Okay.
And all, I don't know how many people died when it went down. But we think somebody was still left on the boat.
Ouch.
So at any rate, the fireman said that the toxicity of the air would have had all of us dead within maybe 10 minutes more if we hadn't gotten out of that boat. So that was how we started with the Lady Free.
Okay.
But at any rate, at that point, then we decided to do some things around the Bay Area. And at
and
that
you,
point,
you weren't working at that point?
Oh yeah, I was working. Sure,
you were working. For
I was
IBM,
commuting.
Wasn't?
I was working with IBM.
Okay.
And I was commuting and across the bay by ferry, you know, in the San Francisco Bay. And then I was approached by an organization called the Bay Area Marine Institute. And they're a training school for teaching kids marine skills.
Okay.
And they said, we'd love to have the kids come aboard and help you with your work on the boat. We were still, you know, still working on it. And in exchange, if you could take us out for a ride, maybe on a Sunday afternoon, let the kids get some experience with actually an old sailing ship. Because this boat still was gaff-rigged. It had all the blocks and tackles and nothing like
wow.
a modern boat at all.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden, we were approached by another organization that said, hey, would you be interested in entering a tall ships race and representing the city of San Francisco in the tall ships race? And I said, wow. I says, well, what's involved in that? And so I had to go through the International Tall Ship Association, which is based in London, England.
Okay.
And the boat had to be all specially approved. And then they said, now all the kids, when you're doing a tall ships race, have to be inexperienced. I said, inexperienced. And they said, well, with the exception of your own kids, because obviously we had considerable experience. So we had to start interviewing kids in the Bay Area for positions on the boat.
Now, when you say kids, what age frame are we talking?
From about 13 to 18.
Really, that
18.
Young?
Oh, yeah, all teenagers.
Wow.
13 to 18.
Okay.
And so we ended up with 16 kids, half boys, half girls. And so all this was going on, getting ready for that big tall ships race. It was called the Captain Cook Bicentennial,
okay.
the 200th anniversary. It's a 6,000-mile cruise, by the way, from San Francisco to Hawaii, from Hawaii to Victoria, Canada, down to Vancouver, Canada, and then all the way back to the States. And then we hop, skipped, and jumped all the way down to Los Angeles, stopping in different ports along the way.
These 13-year-old kids, their parents said, sure, go, have fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One of the kids came from a very wealthy family, the Firestone family.
Yeah.
And I was not impressed with him when I interviewed him, nor was my wife. But he said, well, I'm going to make a large donation to the Bay Area Marine
now
Institute.
Now we're impressed with him.
Now, all of a sudden, I wasn't, but the Bay Area Marine Institute was, you know.
We like this kid.
And because we were trying to pick kids that we thought could get along with each other,
right,
you know,
right.
And not because of their skills with what, because they were going to have to all learn at the same time. So at any rate, off we went. And that was in 1978. We left San Francisco and for Hawaii. And of course, halfway across, we had to run into some bad weather. You know, it's just Murphy's Law. And so for 4 days, we were in 40 mile-an-hour winds,
ooh,
and the seas were 40-foot seas. That means 40 feet up, 40 feet down, 40 feet up, 40
that's
feet down.
That's a lot
down.
Of water.
Four solid days. Needless to say, everybody got seasick on the boat, except me. But, you know, we struggled through, and that's where I found out that girls have got a big up on the guys. Because the guys all collapsed on us. Even though they were stronger,
right.
They just either wanted to be thrown overboard or they wanted to curl up in their bunks. But the girls would stand their watches. They were cooking the food, and they were just as sick as the guys were. And so we had a big party celebrating the girls that were on board when we got to Hawaii.
So we got about a minute left in the segment here.
Sure.
How long did it take you to get over to Hawaii?
Let's see, about 17, 18 days, I guess.
Okay.
Yep.
And then when you were in Hawaii, how long were you in Hawaii?
Oh, just a few days, because that was the first leg of the race.
Okay.
Going from San Francisco to Hawaii was not part of the race. It was from Hawaii on, therefore.
Okay, got it.
So, so at any rate, and I have a training diagram here. I know we're on radio, but we had to teach the kids every single part of that boat, all the lines, all the standing rigging, all the running rigging, so that they knew, even in the middle of the night, what line did what.
Sure. Okay.
And
we're going to take a short break. When we come back, more with today's special guest, my friend Captain Richard Chesbrough from the Willamette Queen.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM, brought to you today by the Lule Group.
We're back in 5, 4, cue Terry. 2, 1, you're on.
We're back. This is the Terry Saul Weekend Show. We're talking with my buddy, Captain Richard Chesbrough from the Willamette Queen. And we were just talking a few minutes ago about you sailing, and you put together another crew of youngsters, and you went to Hawaii. And then from Hawaii, where'd you go?
From Hawaii, we went to Victoria, Canada.
Okay.
And from Victoria to then to Vancouver. And each port, the tall ships gathered. And big celebrations, dinners, lots of going aboard each other's boats and meeting celebrities. And so it was a lot of fun. I mean, dockside.
How many different ships were there in this race?
There were 13.
Okay.
13 tall ships. And we were obviously the smallest. But we were still registered as a tall ship.
Okay.
And because we had square sails on the forward mast. It's called a brigantine schooner, which means it's got two main masts. And the forward mast has square sails on it, and the back mast just has one great big sail.
Mm-hmm. And so when you guys are, 13 ships are out and you're going from Hawaii to Canada, are you in contact with each other? Do you see each other at all?
You're in contact. Not too often do you see each other. Every once in a while we would spot another boat. Which was kind of exciting for us because we thought we'd be in the way in the back of the line,
right?
And here's boats that are just barely ahead of us, you know, but they're much larger. I mean, these things are 300-400 feet long.
So would you talk to each other if one of the boats suddenly needed help? You're there.
Well, that was part of the reason for talking to each other, to make sure that there was no emergencies going on anywhere, and there weren't. It was mainly weather checks. If anybody was running into some rough weather, they would let everybody else know, go further south or go further north or whatever to
see,
to
I wouldn't tell anybody.
You wouldn't tell anybody.
Nah. If the weather was south, I'd tell them, you might want to take the southern route.
Take the southern route. It's like those fishermen on the Deadliest Catch.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
They never tell anybody where the fish are biting or the crabs in the case of the crabbers.
So you get to Canada.
Yep, we get to Canada. Everybody's having a great time on board. And by the way, I forgot to tell you that one kid that we were having the wealthy family.
Firestone boy.
The crew got together and unanimously voted him off the boat.
So, oh.
Yeah, we're not going to continue on if he's going to be on board. I mean, to give you an example, we were in the middle of the ocean out there. And he was seasick, like everybody else was.
Right.
But he decided to call his mother on the sideband radio that we had when nobody was in the radio room. So he knew how to work the radio. Called his mother and asked her to fly a helicopter out to
what?
Pick him up in the middle of the ocean.
Oh.
Needless to say, that wasn't going to happen.
No.
And so I think the time was right for him to leave the boat. That was
so much for that large
move.
Donation, then, right?
So much for the large donation. Well, they were trying to make a man out of him, show him what mm-hmm. life could be like, a little tough. He wasn't ready for that, you know. So, anyways, we are now hop, skipping, and jumping from port to port, and we came into San Francisco, and that was another great spot. Had a big party there as well, and. And the Coast Guard was a little upset with us because we had accepted some donations just prior to leaving. So I was served some papers when I was in San Francisco that I had violated the rules of the whole thing. And so on the next leg of the trip, I stayed behind off the boat and just let my wife captain it for the next leg. And I was fighting with the Coast Guard over that because, I mean, they were talking big fines. They were going to take my license away from me.
Wow.
All that stuff. And I finally got the Tall Ship Association to back me up on it. But those life, they were big canisters that were donated to us by one of the shipping companies. And they were absolutely essential. When you're out at sea and you got that many kids, you've got to have more than just an open life raft. And these things were like, when they would inflate in the water, they were totally covered
right,
and closed
right, right.
And it just made us feel a whole lot safer. So at any rate, that went away, but it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. And you know the reason why? It's because I beat the Coast Guard cutter into San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
and out of the 13 ships, we placed fourth. The Coast Guard kind of came in fifth. So,
you know, Rick,
what we want.
You have a habit of pissing off the Coast Guard, don't you? No wonder they don't like you.
That one was a sweet victory,
yeah,
that one.
Yeah.
And you know the reason why they did is because they didn't want to miss all the parties in San Francisco.
Sure.
So they cranked up their motors, and they were motor sailing. And that's definitely a no-no. So they lost out big time there. But at any rate...
That's why you don't get Christmas cards from the Coast Guard to this day.
Probably. No, mostly they're a great bunch of guys, you know. Yes, I had a couple of little run-ins with them, but, you know, that's...
That's a whole other show.
That's another whole show, absolutely. At any rate, I know we're running close on time here, but shortly thereafter, my wife met somebody else that she liked better than me.
Another captain.
And so I was served with divorce papers.
Oh, you've got to stay out of San Francisco. You're getting served left and right there.
I tell you. And the kids were all upset about it. You know, they wanted to stay because we were still living on the boat.
Sure.
And they wanted to stay with the boat and with me and everything. And but in the divorce settlement, the kids had to go with her.
Right.
And I was awarded the boat. So that's what I walked away with in the divorce. And of course, the kids would come down and visit me and would play on the boat. And
where were you living at that point?
Sausalito.
Okay, you were back in Sausalito.
Back in Sausalito.
Where were the kids and the mother?
In Milbrae.
Okay,
not Milbrae. Because it was on the other side of the bay.
Berkeley, San Ramon, all those. Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
it was
close to Sausalito.
Okay.
And maybe that's when we were in Novato. Nope, she wasn't in Novato. But anyways, one of those towns, though, that goes back too many years for my memory.
Is she still around?
She sure is. Yeah. Yep, she still lives in the Bay Area.
Is the tugboat man still around?
He's passed away.
Okay.
He's long gone. And we're still best of friends because we had all these adventures together.
Sure.
And frankly, I think she made some bad decisions, and she realizes that now.
Oh, well. Now you've got the grand prize.
Yep.
With your current wife here.
So then I was planning my next trip.
All right. And we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll get to that next trip and figure out where you went from there. Back in a moment with more of Captain Richard in just a second.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group.
We're back in 5, 4, Q Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM, brought to you today by the Lule Group.
We are back. This is Terry Saul on the weekend show with Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. I am your host. Today we're talking to Captain Richard Chesbrough, my buddy. And when we were just talking, you just went through a divorce. Oh, well, that happens. And now you've got the ship, the boat, and you're down in the Bay Area by yourself there. And do you have any interesting issues down in the Bay Area before you took your next trip?
Just prior to the divorce, we had an interesting thing happen. Mayor Moscone and Harvey Milk were shot and killed by another commissioner.
I remember that.
His name was Dan White.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I believe it was either 78 or 79, somewhere late 70s. The mayor called us. By the way, Dianne Feinstein was the incoming.
You recognize that hair anywhere.
I recognize that name anywhere, absolutely. So she called us up and asked if we would be willing to help out with the funeral of Harvey Milk. And I said, well, in what way? Well, he wants to have his ashes scattered at sea outside of San Francisco Bay. We thought with the size of his group, that your vessel might be the ideal, and he would love it if it was on a tall ship. So I said, okay, how can you say no, you know? So we go over to the San Francisco side from Sausalito, and we go into the yacht club, which is a real posh, you know, yacht club. I think it's called the Golden Gate Yacht Club, not knowing what to expect. Well, the first thing that comes aboard is a lawyer, and he's representing the group that knew Harvey Milk. And he says, well, he says, I need all of you to sign this non-disclosure statement. And I said, non-disclosure? Yep. He says, you're not going to be allowed to talk to any media or anybody about what happens today. And I says, do you know something that I don't know about what's going to, I thought we were just going to scatter some ashes. Well, yes, but, you know, this is kind of a unique group of that are going out. You know, they're all Harvey's associates and friends with the LB, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was gay, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, with that community.
Okay.
And I, of course, knew that. At any rate, we signed, no problem, you know.
And so here you are today talking on the radio about it.
Yeah, well, I think enough years have passed by.
Hang on just a second. Sergeant, we'll be done in just a second here. Go ahead.
Actually, I've been interviewed by other people between here and there. So at any rate, we're waiting for them to come. And just before they start coming down the ramp, they rolled out this red carpet all the way down, you know, like it's a marriage ceremony.
Sure.
But all this red carpet rolls out. Both sides of the carpet, there were people lined up on both sides, both men and women,
okay,
all from the gay community.
Okay.
And they were throwing roses and flowers out in front of the procession as they were coming down. And, of course, there's cameramen, you know, doing all the picture taking. None of them were allowed to step aboard the boat, though. So all the camera people and I had to stay on the dock. We get them all on board and off we go. My son comes up to me and he said, Dad, you know, he says, I really feel uncomfortable about all these people, these guys hugging each other. And, you know, he just never had that experience before. And I said, well, you just hang out back here with me. And your mother and sister and brother can handle the group. First thing that happens as we're going out, they bring up a box. It looks like a cigar box. And I thought those are Harvey's ashes, you know. So they open up the box. And next thing I know, they're all bringing out these huge joints that they were all rolled up in the box. So everybody's passing around, you know, the joints. And they're just getting happy and having a good time.
Sure they are.
So we go out through the Golden Gate Bridge, and we get into the choppy water. It's a notorious rough area.
It's about a mile and a half out.
It is, yeah.
I've done that before. It is bumpy.
And these guys are, three of them are out on the bowsprit, which is like 12 feet out in front of the boat, and they're going up and down with the waves.
Yeah.
So obviously seasickness was my main concern. So the guy comes back to me that's in charge, and he says, Captain, he says, can we kind of speed this up a little bit? He says, I don't want everybody to get seasick and be throwing up all over the deck and everything. I said, absolutely. But I said, wait until I turn the boat, and when you do your service or whatever you're going to do, your words over Harvey's ashes, make sure you're on the leeward side of the boat. And I assumed that he understood what I meant.
Right.
He did not.
Oops.
So they say all their nice, kind words, and then they throw his ashes right directly into the wind
on the
windward side.
Oh, no.
And, of course, half of our Harvey ends up back on the deck of the boat. And they're jumping around, you know, wiping their bodies to wipe the ashes off of them and so forth. And my youngest son, Mark, comes up and he said, Dad, he says, shall I break out the fire hose and hose down the deck? I said, well, ask him if that's, you know, okay. But yes, that's what we should do. So he did that. And he's up there on the bow of the boat. And of course, I'm back still steering the boat. And he's walking around the deck with that great big fire hose. And he's singing, I'm going to wash that man right out of my hair. And, of course, everybody cracked up, you know. So we get back inside the bay, and everybody's fine. The next thing that happens, they bring up this great big punch bowl.
Mm-hmm.
This is right after the Jonestown event, you know, where all those people committed suicide.
Right.
And they had grape juice, and they're pouring it all into this big punch bowl. And I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute, whoa, you know, because that was still too fresh in my mind.
Sure.
So I call the guy back, and I said, what's happening here? What's with the punch bowl? And he says, well, Harvey had a kind of a weird sense of humor, but he would have appreciated, you know, this dedication to the people in Jonestown. I said, okay, so there's nothing in the punch except punch. Absolutely. No alcohol, no nothing.
Right.
And so they did that. And like I say, that's the way the day was going. And we got back to San Francisco, and everybody had a grand time, and Harvey finally got flushed overboard.
I remember we did that same thing with my mother-in-law. We were obviously on a lot smaller boat, but they had to go out like a mile and a half past the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah.
I guess that's considered international waters, and you can dump the ash there. But they told us the same thing. They says, wait until we get this boat turned around, because you don't want these winds hitting you. And sure enough.
That patch, by the way, is called the Potato Patch. That's really rough water. It's notorious. And anybody that sails in and out of San Francisco Bay knows all about the Potato Patch. Yeah.
Isn't it spectacular going underneath the Golden Gate Bridge. Isn't that a beautiful sight to go underneath that bridge?
It sure is.
It's just amazing.
We had one experience, though, where we were sailing under it, and the tide was coming in, and I had 12 sails flying. I mean, 12 of them on the boat, had the engine going full blast, and we were at an absolute standstill right underneath the Golden Gate Bridge.
Really?
And we heeled over, we're looking good, and the boat wasn't going an inch.
The boat wasn't going anywhere.
So you finally just say, Mother Nature, you win, turn around, go back in. Yeah.
Okay, so now you're back in there. You've divorced the wife. You've dumped the mayor into the ocean there.
No, he was a counselor. Okay, he wasn't the mayor. So Moscone was the mayor.
So at that point now, you decided to make this round. You're going to go out again and go around the world trip, or what are you going to do?
Well, I had this dream of putting the boat into a commercial service in the St. Thomas, in the islands of the Caribbean.
Okay.
And St. Thomas is an American island, so I figured...
Is that where we went? When we went on the cruise, was St. Thomas, St. Martin?
I think it was. Yeah, absolutely.
So. Okay.
Yep, I think it was. Beautiful waters down there. I had sailed there before on a different sailboat and just loved it down there. So that was my goal. So I put together a crew. There were 16 of us on board, none of which were my kids or relatives of any sort. They were all, in fact, we had every nationality represented.
Oh, nice.
And all 16 were different from different countries. Mm-hmm. You know, our first stop was in Costa Rica, and then, Mexico, then Costa Rica. We actually got thrown out of Mexico because we had a...
Why does that not surprise me? Knowing you, that does not surprise me.
Things got a little out of control.
Who'd you piss off there?
Yeah. Well, the yacht club that we were staying at.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We had a hot tub on board, and the word got around the marina that we threw great parties and with the hot tub and all. And it got a little carried away, needless to say. Mm-hmm. And so we were invited to leave the next morning. So we went to Costa Rica, and we were much better off than all the others. The guys weren't quite as crazy, you know. And people were coming and going. You know, one person would leave, and then somebody else would jump on.
Right.
And then we went to the Panama Canal. And,
how exciting was that? Was that your first time going through the canal?
That was not my first time,
okay. But
it was my first time on that boat.
Yeah.
And
so what do? How long does it take to go through the canal?
A full day.
Okay, so you get there at the crack of dawn, and do you have to wait your turn, or do they just stick you
on
the ships? Or how
no, they you may sometimes have to wait days before they'll let you through.
Okay.
Because it's a pretty popular canal, needless to say. And we were allowed to go through with a ship. That would be enough room in a lock. So that's what we did.
You have to pay to go through there?
We did not have to pay. The big ships cover all the expense. So there was... what we did have to do, though, is I had to give up my firearms. I had some beautiful firearms on the boat, all stainless steel so they wouldn't rust.
Right.
And Noriega was in charge at that time, and they had this rule, no firearms in the locks. But we will just give them back to you when you get to the other side.
Sure we will.
Sure we will.
Yeah, hold your breath on that one.
Yeah, you know where that one's going.
Yeah.
So
back on the other side, you say, where's my weapons, and what do they tell you?
We don't have them yet. They're in transit.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, in transit. I mean, they could have had them there within hours, just driving somebody from one side to the other.
Right.
But obviously, I think Noriega's got him in his personal stash by then.
All right.
So... they said, wait until tomorrow. Well, tomorrow came and went. The following day came and went. And finally I said, you know, we got to get going. You know, we were coming into hurricane season.
Yeah, that's what they're waiting you out.
They were just waiting us out.
Yeah
absolutely. And we had a great group of people on board. We could speak, because of their nationalities, we could speak four or five different languages.
Wow.
So whenever we dealt with that, we had somebody that could talk to
them. Are you paying these people on board? Do they get paid?
No,
or is it just,
no,
just
room and board.
Okay.
And the experience.
Okay.
Some of them wanted to go further on into South America, and they were hoping we were going to, go straight down.
Right.
And as it turned out, we ended up doing that, but that wasn't part of the plan. But when we come back, I'll tell you the story about the San Blas Islands on the other side of the Panama Canal.
So when you're planning this, are you planning where you're going to be and how many days you're going to be there, or are you just winging it as you're going?
We had a basic plan based on weather conditions, and I really wanted to get across the Caribbean before the hurricane season hit.
Yeah.
And it was going to be close. I knew it was going to be close, and as it turned out, we ended up running into a hurricane, and
And surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. And we broke our mast in the upper mast. It wasn't the hurricane that hit us. It was what they call a chubasco. It's just a strong wind that comes out of nowhere. And it literally caught us off guard. I mean, one minute we're sailing along beautifully, and the next minute the wind is howling 50 miles an hour.
Wow.
And nobody wanted to go up in the rigging to drop the sails, you know, because they're square sails. You got to climb out on the yards, which means you're just standing on a rope and holding onto the yard and then trying to furl this sail in that kind of wind. I wouldn't ask anybody to do that.
Where is Mark when you need him?
Where's Mark?
He'd have done it.
He probably would have done it. So would my son, Chris.
Yeah.
And
all right, we need to take a short break here, Captain, real quick. And when we come back, we'll be more with Captain Richard Chesbrough and the Willamette Queen right after this.
You're listening to the Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM, brought to you today by the Lule Group.
We're back in 5, 4, Q Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
You're listening to the Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM, brought to you today by the Lule Group.
We are back with our final few minutes of today's show. My guest has been my buddy, Captain Richard Chesbrough. We're talking about his second voyage around the world on a little dinghy that he puts a bunch of people in there and takes off, right?
Absolutely.
Any idea what that boat weighed?
150 tons.
150 tons. What does the Willamette Queen weigh?
100 tons.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. And how long is the Willamette Queen?
87 feet.
Okay. And this one was 104?
102.
102.
Yep. Right.
So just try to picture it longer than the Willamette Queen.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, so you just got through the Panama Canal there, and they took all your guns. Did you ever run into any pirates?
We did, on the Moon Mist. Not on this boat, because we had too many people on board.
Right.
And the pirates were basically islanders who were just thieves. And the thing that they really liked to steal was our clothing. And because we would hang our clothing on the rails, you know, around.
Right.
And they were just wire anyways, and so we just clip them on with clips. We'd get up in the morning and, damn, all of our clothes are gone, you know, shorts, T-shirts. And then we'd go ashore the next day and we'd see kids running around with our clothes on.
And what do you do? Nothing?
Yeah, what are you going to do? Yeah. What are you going to do?
You're outnumbered. Do nothing.
We did have a crew member on board. His name was Ian Calvert, and he was from South Africa. He decided after a couple of times that happened to us, he says, I'm going to fix him. So he says, I'm going to sleep on deck. What we didn't realize he did, he was sleeping on deck all right, but he also scattered tacks all around on the deck.
Oh, no.
So that when he heard somebody going, yow, ouch, yeah. Ooh, you know, then he would wake up and he wouldn't hurt anybody, but he had a great big Bowie knife that he carried in a sheath. And he'd put that between his teeth and he'd, you know, jump up and yell. And, oh, my God, they would just dive off the boat.
Tax and all.
Leave their little canoes tied up to the boat. Yeah. And they were gone. You know, they were just swimming for their life. But
anyways. You left the Panama Canal and where'd you head?
Well, we were trying to head towards the islands. But then I believe it was Hurricane David came along and he was going through the islands. So we decided, well, we're going to hug the coast. You know, going along the South American coast. There's a group of islands there called the San Blas Islands. And so we decided to stop there just for a couple of nights just to kind of refresh ourselves and whatever. Fell in love with the people and with the islands. The hospitality was over the top. They were so excited to see a big square rigger, you know, coming into their waters. We just had so many great stories. We played basketball against them, and they were little short people, kind of like, you know, the pygmies and whatever. Yeah. But, oh, my God, could they play basketball? I mean, they ran. And circles around us and run between our legs or whatever, you know, to make the baskets.
Did you fly an American flag? Did you have an American flag?
Oh, yeah. Of course we did.
The whole time? The whole time?
Absolutely.
Did you ever think at any point, well, let's bring the flag down for today while we're going through this area here?
No, not really. Yeah. Why? I mean, we were in...
I don't know. I was just wondering if...
We stayed away from Nicaragua, other countries that were having a lot of civil unrest going on.
Right.
Costa Rica was fine. Mexico was fine, and I think we skipped all the others and went straight for Panama.
Yeah. Did you go by Cuba at all?
No, we were on the other side. I did go by Cuba on another boat, but that's another story. At any rate, when we left the San Blas Islands, and by the way, these people are incredible. They gave us, everybody gives you, when you're in the island, they give you a gift as a going away gift and hoping that you'll come back again. You know what they gave me?
Hmm.
A live tiger, a baby tiger.
What the hell are you going to do with that on the ship?
Well, that's what I told them. I says, I can't take a baby tiger. I said, he needs to be with his mother. And they said they found him in the jungle, and the mother had abandoned him, and they didn't know how to care for it either, so they thought, well, maybe you can figure it out. So
what are you going to do with the baby tiger? You know, they don't stay babies long.
No, they don't, no. But he looked like a big cat. You know, the crew fell in love with him, and we wrapped him up and fed him bottles. You know, we had powdered milk and stuff on board, but we didn't have mother's milk.
How long did you keep him on board?
Until he died, which was about a week.
Oh,
I mean, he didn't last very long. It was just very moving experience. We did a burial at sea for the poor tiger, and I mean, he was gorgeous, just a beautiful young cat. So anyways, the San Blas people, fantastic. If ever anybody's down in the Panama Canal area, you'll meet them because they sell their molas, what they call molas, and they're all handmade. And they what they do is they make the colors of the pattern by using different colors fabric, and they sew one on top of another to get the design that they want. Very intricate. It takes them weeks to make one of these things.
Wow.
That's how the San Blas Indians, the Kuna Indians is what they're called. That's how they make money. It's a matriarchal society because the women are the ones that do that, and the women are the only ones that make the money.
There you go.
The men, all they do is fish and make babies, you know. So at any rate, off we go from the San Blas Islands, and like I say, we run into Hurricane David. So we're having to still hug the shoreline, but we got hit by the outskirts of the hurricane, and it broke our forward mast, snapped the yard right in half across the top of the mast, and we lost the top of the mast. So we had to put in for repairs, so we ended up going into Cartagena, Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
And again, wonderful welcome. They helped us. They didn't have shipyards like we do the kind of repairs that we needed. So it took us a couple of months to even get the repairs done.
Wow.
But now we were really in the middle of the hurricane season, and so there was no way we were going to leave. So we ended up getting stuck there for about 6 months.
Wow.
I rotated crew members. Some of them had to keep moving on. But we were living on board just had a wonderful experience there in Cartagena.
That's incredible.
And I'd love to tell you about the Coca-Cola commercial I did while in Cartagena.
Okay.
Real quick. But there's a big center area, and they have a statue, and there's a little hill that comes down into it. Well, they spotted me on the beach one day with one of my parrots. I had two parrots on board the boat. So they said, will you drive the Busetta for us? And we're going to do a Coca-Cola commercial. And my daughter was with me at the time. So she was actually selling flowers at a little flower booth. And the whole thing was staged. You know, they had cameras everywhere,
sure,
big scaffolding. The idea was to go up. They put this little Busetta up at the top of the hill. And they loaded up the roof with all kinds of fruits and vegetables and stuff. I was to come on down at the statue. There was going to be a carriage coming across right in my way with tourists on it. And a horse-drawn carriage, and they said, what you got to do is slam the brakes on and not hit the carriage. Well, the son of a guns didn't have any brakes on the bus, so I hit the carriage.
Oh,
I didn't have any choice.
Oh, no.
And the bananas and everything went everywhere. The guy jumps off. He's about to kill me in Spanish. And then these two girls come out with Coca-Colas, one for him, one for me. We both were supposed to sing Una Sonrisa, the whole Coca-Cola jingle in Spanish.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the commercial. And that commercial ran for over a year after that. It was one of the most successful Coca-Cola commercials. And I was paid $300 for the whole stint.
No kidding.
That poor guy was so upset until they told him they were going to fix his carriage better than new.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to hit the horse. So I hit the front end of the carriage,
bus. And you know what? I've seen the way you drive, and I can understand that. I've been in the car with you.
And you know what I had in the back of the bus?
What?
I had a horn band, with clarinets
and
bugles and slide trombones. And these guys are just playing away through the whole thing.
That's funny.
It was hilarious.
Captain, we're out of time. And we
all right.
I still have more questions to ask. I want to hear more about your stories here because I think find them fascinating. And from what our listeners have said, they're enjoying them too. Real quickly, tell me about the Willamette Queen.
Okay. Well, we're up and running. We obviously had a slowdown during the pandemic, like so many businesses did. But we're full steam right now. We've got 22 weddings scheduled this summer. Lots of private parties. So if you've got something you'd like to do, or just come out for dinner or lunch with us, or an excursion, give us a call.
What's the phone number?
503-371-1103.
All right. Captain, would you come back and join me again?
I'd love to.
I got more to talk about.
Okay. No problem.
We are just about out of time for today's show. Remember, you can catch our show every Saturday at 10 a.m. and a replay Sundays at 6 p.m. right here on Salem's original radio station, KSLM. A reminder, if you missed any of today's show or would like to hear any of my shows, you can always hear a podcast on our official KSLM website at www.kslm.news or on my official website at www.terrysaul.com. If you would like to drop me a note, I'd love to hear from you. My email address is terry@kslm.news. We'll see you next time. Take care and be safe.
You've been listening to The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM KSLM. Today's show is brought to you by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance. That's a wrap. Thanks, everybody. Good show.
Bye, everybody.